Welcome back to another episode of the Jacob Johnston Show. This episode is going to be a little bit different than previous episodes, as we're not necessarily covering the big news of the week, but taking a look at the overall broader picture. And when you take a look at it, you realize things are getting scarier and scarier in the United States as the Democrats are getting closer and closer to their authoritarian overthrow of the Constitutional Republic. The Democrats' weaponization of government didn't just happen overnight. It didn't just suddenly spring up. It was something that was happening gradually over time. And it was because we failed to hold anybody accountable, failed to make anybody engaged in the corruption pay a price, be held accountable for any of it, that it was allowed to continue. Every time they had engaged in illegal activity and got away with it without any consequences, it only emboldened them to engage in more criminal activity, just like any other criminal. It's just like when you go through and you take a look at left-wing states and how criminals are being given a free pass on everything, which only emboldens them to engage in more crimes and more serious crimes. That's what happened with the gradual corruption and weaponization of government. And we, the people, need to start holding them accountable, even if our elected officials will not. So when we go through and we take a look at this, we're going to start off by talking about the ATF, for example. Now, maybe you have noticed, but the ATF is now going around and harassing gun owners, where if you buy a gun or you buy more than one gun, they may stop by and start asking you questions and asking to see your firearm just to make sure you still have it. There is nothing constitutionally legal about this action. They cannot just show up because they got a report from, I don't know, probably when they do the background check at the gun store to show that you bought a gun or that you, you know, passed the criminal background check. There is nothing legal about them using that to then show up on your doorstep and demanding to see that firearm, you know, to ensure you still have it. They have no probable cause. They have no reason of suspicion, nothing. This is a constitutional violation, which violates your constitutional right to be protected from unreasonable searches and seizures, right? So when they show up and they start demanding that you show them that you still have the firearm, if you tell them to leave and they refuse to leave, well, now they are trespassing. And they are trespassing at that point while engaged in illegal activity. But if you don't hold them accountable, if you don't file lawsuits, if you don't call the police on them, now I get it. In some areas, maybe the police are not that good. Maybe they are a bunch of authoritarian left-wingers in certain areas where calling the police will just make things worse by having the police back up the ATF's illegal actions. And because you had called the police, now you can't necessarily demand that they leave. Well, that may be debatable, right? But you can tell them that you want to press charges on them, and if they refuse to do so, and if they refuse to escort the person off the property, then you can probably just try and ask both of them to leave. But it may get a little hairy about, you know, you calling the police. So just be kind of aware of what the police are like in your area. But if the ATF shows up and tries to engage in this illegal, unconstitutional search, and the police in your area are, you know, not good, you know, they're a bunch of authoritarian left-wingers, then just get their name, their badge number, close the door, and call your lawyer. File a massive lawsuit on the ATF. Right? But the fact that they're going around violating the Constitution to try and engage in these unreasonable searches and then refusing to leave when you ask them to leave, did that just happen overnight? No. That has been a gradual corruption of the agency. And then we go off and we see how they are issuing new rules at the ATF where they are reclassifying accessories to handguns such as pistol grips to being short-barreled rifles. Where do they get any such authority? I take a look at the Constitution and all lawmaking authority, it rests in the hands of Congress. I didn't see Congress outlaw it. Congress didn't pass any law towards that. And when they go off and they say, well, they're reclassifying, who gives them classification authority? I mean, the law defines the legal classification of item. The ATF can't single-handedly reclassify something as short-barreled rifle that isn't a short-barreled rifle. I mean, under the law, is not the same as the gender crap where you can just, I don't know, self-identify as whatever you want. They can't just go off and just claim a gun as something or a different classification that it isn't, just so that they can infringe upon your Second Amendment rights. And that's at the ATF. Now, that goes into the broader scope here of things that we have seen in the FBI and the broader intelligence community. You know, all those intelligence agents that signed that letter deliberately lying to the American people, claiming that the Biden laptop was Russian disinformation, even though they knew it was a lie. Did that just happen overnight? Did that level of politicization, corruption in the intelligence community just happen overnight, where they start directly and deliberately interfering in domestic elections? That didn't happen overnight. And then, of course, everything that has gone on at the FBI, where we know how massively corrupt to the core that the FBI is. You know, we have seen the Durham report come out and say exactly what we knew it was going to say, that the FBI, in coordination with the Democrat Party, engaged in a baseless spying operation on President Trump, that the information that they gained during the campaign found its way to the Clinton campaign, that we also see that they knew that the investigation into Trump was bogus from the get-go, and they didn't care. They did it anyways. But here's the thing. When they continued that investigation after the election in an attempt to try and find something with which to justify removing Trump from the presidency, what they did wasn't just a constitutional violation. It was outright treason. And nothing happened. Nothing happened to those in the FBI that broke the law, committed perjury, and actively engaged in treason. In fact, not only did they not suffer any consequences, they were rewarded in most instances for their action. And of course, since leaving office, the FBI hasn't let up. The government hasn't let up on their targeting of President Trump. So long as there was a possibility that Trump would once again try to run for the presidency of the United States, they kept targeting him. Of course, the targeting efforts stepped up after he announced his bid for the White House. Again, opening up baseless investigations, targeting him, harassing him, trying to find a way to throw him in jail with no good reason. And then, of course, now we have that disgrace Alan Brigg making up laws that don't even exist in order to try and justify his claim that even if it was true, is like jaywalking. And jaywalking outside the statute of limitations. They're doing everything that they can to interfere in the election once again and trying to engage in the weaponization of government to arrest and criminalize political opposition to the Democrats' authoritarian rule. But it goes even beyond that with how corrupt the FBI is. So we see here that from whistleblower reports, you know, a whistleblower told Republican investigators that the FBI has become cancerous and has let itself become enveloped in this politicization and weaponization. And it is clear from these disclosures, and this, by the way, this is from the Epoch Times. It is clear from these disclosures, and especially in the wake of Special Counsel John Durham's report, that the FBI has become politically weaponized. Among other findings, the report reveals the way in which the FBI sought to inflate domestic terrorism figures. Inflate figures. So when they go out there and they say domestic terrorism is on the rise or white supremacy is on the rise, these numbers are bogus. They're made up. They're fake. They go off, I mean, it's much like the reported death during COVID, where they just make it up and bullshit us. In one example given by the whistleblower about the inflating of reported domestic terrorism was in particular to January 6th cases. According to the report, the FBI Washington field office pressured its Boston office to investigate 140 individuals in connection to January 6th. However, only two of the 140 people so much as entered the Capitol. So they were being pressured to open up cases as instances of domestic terrorism. Now, they're opening up 140 cases related to one event, which inflates the numbers. And out of the 140 people that they were investigating, 138 of them stayed outside the Capitol and did nothing more than, what, hold signs while chanting? And that is a case of domestic terrorism? No, that is the exercising of the First Amendment, which, by the way, exercising your First Amendment, they are classifying as domestic terrorism. Exercising any of your rights that they don't agree with is signs of domestic terrorism. Right. In the report, also, FBI leadership pressured agents to reclassify cases as domestic violence extremism and even manufactured domestic violence extremism cases where none otherwise existed. Now, what is the definition of domestic violence extremism? Well, conservatives exercising the First Amendment to hold signs and chant. It doesn't actually have anything to do with physical violence because, you know, remember, under the left, words are violence if they disagree with them, right? So, I mean, this is unbelievable, everything that is going on here. Another finding in the report revealed that Bank of America had provided the FBI with confidential information about its customers' bank transactions in Washington on January 6th. Those known to have purchased firearms through their Bank of America accounts were bumped to the top of the disclosure. I wonder, where was the warrant for any of this information? Did they have any warrants? Did they have any basis for demanding the financial transactions on these particular individuals? And what legal ramifications or avenues do the individuals have whose information was given over to the FBI to sue Bank of America, right? Because you understand that when you go off and you take a look at, you know, the information that these banks and other institutions give you, they talk about how they are safeguarding your data, your privacy, you know, your information. They admit at the banks and all of that, that it's not the bank's information, just like the cell phone companies. When they go out and they give their data privacy disclosures, they admit that your information is your information, not the company's. So if they're handing over information, then they're colluding with the government if there is no warrant to violate your constitutional rights. All right, so to go on more here. Other whistleblower allegations claim that the FBI created threat tags to target pro-life individuals and organizations in the aftermath of the Supreme Court decisions. So after the Supreme Court overturned the Roe v. Wade decision, all of a sudden, if you're a pro-life individual or organization, you're a threat, not based off of any actions that you have done, but just based off of your belief in pro-life movement, that your belief in pro-life, that we shouldn't kill babies. Because of that, all of a sudden, you're a threat, and they attach a threat tag to you, even though you haven't done a single thing that was illegal, just because you expressed a belief. How do they get away with any of this? Because this is pure corruption. This is illegal activity that the FBI itself is engaged in. Still, other whistleblowers claim, backed by leaked documents, reveal that the FBI has also targeted so-called radical traditionalist Catholics, dubbing them RTCs. The leaked documents accuse traditional and Latin Mass Catholic communities of being harbors for white supremacy. So now just being a Christian means you're a white supremacist. And then they have the ability or right to target you, to spy on you, to violate all of your rights under the Constitution. Now, as bad as white supremacy is, and it is horrible and should be condemned, having any such belief is not actually illegal. It's not illegal for you to verbalize any such belief, as long as you don't take any physical action to harm anybody based off of those beliefs. Even though it is a garbage, horrible belief, but even stuff that we disagree with is protected by the First Amendment. But the government deciding that they don't agree with your verbalized views does not give them any right or ability to violate your constitutional rights. But in this particular case, they're not even verbalizing any white supremacy views. They're not even going through and expressing anything of white supremacy. The government is just reclassifying white supremacy to be any Christian views whatsoever, and white supremacists as anybody of the Christian faith. And therefore, if you express your First Amendment right to express your religious beliefs, not even in public, but just inside the church building itself, they're going to classify you as a white supremacist, an extremist, and that somehow gives them the right to violate the Constitution? Think about that for a moment. And how are the Democrats going off and handling all the whistleblowers who are informing on the criminal activities of the Biden administration and the Democrat Party at large? Well, the Democrats are handling that by breaking even more laws to target whistleblowers, to engage in action to punish whistleblowers, which is illegal. And so we see here from Hot Air, two different whistleblowers from two separate law enforcement agencies and two separate high-profile criminal cases are raising a disturbing new question for Congress. Is the Biden administration seeking to squash those who report wrongdoing or challenge its official narratives? Just 24 hours apart, the plight of a decorated FBI intelligence analyst and a decorated supervisory IRS agent burst onto the national scene. The publicly unnamed IRS agent, once a star on the Swiss bank tax evasion case that stunned the world, was unceremoniously dumped along with his entire team from the Hunter Biden tax probe just a few weeks after alleging there was Justice Department political interference in the high-profile matter. So just to recap, in the IRS agent's case, they're investigating the criminal activities of Hunter Biden. The Justice Department is interfering in that case in order to try and squash it, so and try to prevent any criminal investigation into Hunter Biden. They blow the whistle on the Justice Department, and suddenly they are removed from the case and fired. Okay. Then we go off and we take a look at, you know, of course, what's going on with the FBI. FBI whistleblowers have also been faced with retaliatory actions. And so we go off and we take a look at these two cases. And then, yes, the article continues on. Congress is charged with conducting oversight of the administrative branch of the government, including the federal law enforcement and intelligence agencies. But the Justice Department has the responsibility to investigate and prosecute such crimes. What happens when they refuse to investigate themselves when they are the ones breaking the law on behalf of the White House? The various House committees investigating these matters can hold people in the CIA and FBI in contempt of Congress and issue fines, but that's about it. Christopher Wray and Anthony Blinken need to be ejected from their positions and put on trial. But as long as they're doing as the Biden family bids and the Democrats control the Senate, they clearly won't be removed. Even if they are impeached, they won't be convicted, which is a bit of an issue. So what happens when the criminals are the ones in charge of deciding who will and will not be charged with a crime? What happens when those in charge of the justice system are the criminals themselves? What can be done? We could talk about, oh yes, we'll vote for more Republicans. Okay, so they hold their hearings, all right? They recommend criminal charges to the Justice Department. The Justice Department does nothing. Nothing's done. There is no accountability. Just at most, the criminals have to suffer, what, the minor inconvenience of showing up on Congress where they just lie under oath, commit perjury on top of all their other crimes, in which case there are no consequences for them doing so? And you're thinking, what? Oh, the next presidential election, we'll take the White House, so we'll be in control of the Justice Department, we'll have the House and the Senate, and then they will, you know, be held accountable. Has that ever happened? In all of the criminal activities that the Democrats have engaged in over the last 20 years, for which there were numerous, how many times has any of them ever been held accountable when the Republicans took control? Did anybody suffer any consequences for Operation Fast and Furious? No. Did anybody at the IRS suffer any consequences for targeting conservatives during the 2012 election? No. Did the FBI ever suffer any consequences when during Trump's first 2 years in office? Nope. Nothing. Nada. Because by the time the Republicans take control, all of this is going to be dumped down the memory hole, and no one's going to remember to go back and hold anybody accountable, or at least suddenly they lose interest in doing so. And what we see here, when we take a look at the FBI, the intelligence community, the IRS, and the corruption of all the other government agencies who, you know, issue new laws to which they have no constitutional authority to do so, and then try to enforce those laws, and then target the political opponents of the Democrats. When we take a look at all of that, and we see how it happened, the steady progression of it, it leads to a much scarier conclusion, or something that is, well, how I would say is probably the linchpin, the final endgame for the Democrats. Now, we could probably trace the corruption of all these federal agencies back to the public schools, where the people that fill up government or the leadership of government that are absolutely corrupt probably come from left-wing states and went to the most hard left schools where they were basically indoctrinated and brainwashed. But the schools themselves are not the end game. They may have been the beginning, but they're not the end game. The end game for the Democrats is the military. And when we take a look at what the trend has been from all the other corrupt government agencies, we start seeing a very scary pattern as it comes to the military. For instance, have you noticed that there has been a big purge in the military? They engaged a bunch of left-wing mandates, you know, such as the vaccine mandate. Anybody who didn't take the vaccine was purged from the military. That was an ideological test on the military to a large extent. If you didn't take the vaccine, you were likely a conservative, therefore removed from the military. Not to mention that as people retire from the military or go up in age, they have to be replaced with, you know, young recruits who are coming out of the indoctrination camps called public schools. But you start seeing that there's more and more purges that have gone on in the military of anybody who would be considered faithful to the Constitution rather than pledging their allegiance to the DNC. And then we start taking a look at what they are doing in the military. Drag queen story hours in the military? Transgenderism and transgenderism surgery in the military? Woke leadership who are going off there and talking about white anger and white supremacy? You know, as what was that guy? General Mills or Millies or, you know, whatever. A complete and total disgrace. You start seeing that those being promoted to the leadership of the military are hard left ideologues, and that they're now putting transgenderism in leadership positions and so forth. Why do you think all of that is? Think about what would happen if the left achieves its goal, where the military becomes just as corrupt and weaponized as the FBI. That right there is a scary thought, but that is the end game of the left. Now, the question is, what are we going to do about it? Are we going to be taking the same approach that we did with the FBI and every other government agency, where we demand a bunch of hearings and then they have the hearings, they find all these crimes, the Justice Department decides to do absolutely nothing, and then there's no accountability, and then we just roll over and take it? Is that what we're going to do? Are we just going to hope that, you know, we'll take enough power in the next election that we'll be able to undo all of that? Well, first off, if it gets really bad, the election won't matter. The military will just depose the president and take over anyways, you know, or just refuse to follow the orders of the president and just continue on as they are. Now, that's if it gets really bad. But let's assume that they haven't gotten that bad yet. So let's say a Republican becomes president again. Are they going to do anything? Are they going to do anything with the military? Are they going to reverse the course? Are they going to purge the military of any corrupt authoritarian ideologue? No, they'll be too scared to. Not to mention, you know, if they do, the members of the military will likely go to the most extreme left judge, and who's going to say, oh, you must allow them back and doing what they're doing and yada, 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 where you'll have judges interfering. Do you think Congress is going to pass any laws? And if they do, will the laws, you know, withstand corrupt left-wing ideologue judges? I mean, we have seen time and time again where when the left takes political power, you know, and when they do, it's usually under the most questionable of circumstances, they get away with being able to do and implement anything that they want, you know, because that's the authority. But when the right takes power, which you almost have to get 60, 65% of the vote in order to come out with a 51% victory, and they exercise the same authority to just repeal what the left has enacted, all of a sudden, oh, there's no authority to do that. And you get all of these lawsuits and judges ruling that are completely corrupt saying, oh, no, 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 you don't have the authority to undo what your predecessors did. You know, your predecessors, if you have a Democrat, you have more authority as president than you do as Republican. So we know what the left is up to. And I know some people may go off and say, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. You know, the left likes calling anybody who exposes what they're doing conspiracy theorists. It's amazing how many times the so-called conspiracy theorists turned out to be 100% right. It happens all the time because the left are damn liars and they're obvious about what they are doing. So if we go off and take the same tactics that we have done with the FBI and other government agencies, which is basically nothing, but maybe hold a few hearings, it won't be that long before the military is walking through the streets and we no longer have a constitutional republic. It's overthrown. Right now, what the left is doing with the military is their end game. And if they manage to get the military as corrupt and ideological as they have with the FBI, it's over. And there's no nice way to put it. It's either surrender to tyranny or civil war at that point. So what are we going to do? Well, that's a question that you're going to have to answer. Is it going to be, you know, us actually taking definitive action and cleaning up corrupt government? Or are we just going to hold a bunch of hearings, be proud because we got a few viral clips, and then the left just continues on, further corrupting government and violating our rights? Or are we going to do something meaningful? And what is that meaningful action? Well, unfortunately, you know, and maybe, you know, maybe you think we have time to wait until 2024, maybe not. Don't know, you know, but maybe depending on how 2024 goes, maybe the only option is the Second Amendment. I mean, think about this. The reason why, you know, they are getting so corrupt and authoritarian on the left is because there's no accountability. They don't fear we the people because we just keep rolling over and taking it. The Second Amendment is not about hunting rights or sport shooting. It's about we the people having the ability to defend ourselves, not just against foreign threat, but against our own government. But for our own government becoming a threat. The founding fathers knew that at some point the government would become authoritarian, would become a threat. It is the nature of government, and they knew it. And that's why they specifically wrote the Second Amendment. And in all of their writings, they talked when talking about the Second Amendment, we're talking about how we the people needed to be able to have basically the same weaponry in order to match the standing army, for if the government were to become authoritarian and abusive, we would have the ability to rise up and be able to defend ourselves and take out the authoritarians from government. It was so we the people would have the same access to the same weapons as the military. Now, I get it. You can probably, you know, go off and say, well, they couldn't have thought of grenades or rocket launchers or RPGs and so on and so forth. Right? You could talk about whether or not they had the ability to foresee those things coming. But at the same time, we know that the intention was for we the people to be able to match the standing army. And so I would say that the Second Amendment does cover all of those other weapons, and that if the government wanted to restrict those, they would have to pass a constitutional amendment. Now, for legal purposes, I am not going off and recommending one course of action or another, right? I'm just going off and highlighting what the Democrats' endgame is and how ineffective our previous actions have been in stopping the corruption and weaponization of other government agencies. I'm going off and educating on what the Second Amendment is for and the reason it exists. The only thing that I am recommending, though, is to be prepared. Be prepared for the left to weaponize the military. Be prepared for when the military, after being weaponized by the left, starts marching through the streets and declaring the end of the constitutional republic. Be prepared for that, and be prepared with the ability to rise up and take action when it happens. And keep in mind that when we're talking about preparation here, we're not necessarily talking about just preparation for the military just start storming the streets and in one fell swoop as if it's Order 66 in Star Wars. There's probably going to be some sort of predicate for it. And if I were to guess what the predicate that they're going to use, it will be to stabilize, putting that in quote, the country, you know, to provide law enforcement to the country, which could be part of why they're inflating the statistics on extremism and domestic terrorism, violence, and so forth. But it could also be as a result of an economic collapse. Remember, in most situations where a democracy is overthrown by an authoritarian regime, it's always tends to be coupled with an economic collapse. And take a look at what's going on. You know, the massive inflation, the Democrats playing chicken on defaulting on the U.S. debt over the debt ceiling, and they want the debt ceiling raised without conditions so that they can just spend wildly, which is only going to cause an economic collapse of the country. How the Democrats are doing absolutely nothing while with the movement to try and dethrone the USD as the world reserve currency. And if that happens, it's going to lead to an economic collapse. So we see that the Democrats are pushing us towards an economic collapse. And what's going to happen when that when the economy collapses? Oh, the military will be called in to provide stabilization to the country, law enforcement to help out, and so forth will be the claim. When in reality, they're going to start enforcing, you know, immediately lockdowns and martial law and so forth in order to, you know, try and prime us to just accept the overthrow of the Constitution. With that said, you know, just guns, ammo, and body armor is not necessarily the way to, you know, be fully prepared. You also have to be prepared for the economic collapse and handling that while trying to defend your freedom. That means potentially getting bows and arrows, not for defense against the military, but for hunting. I wouldn't use guns and ammo for hunting in a situation where the economy collapses. Bullets run out, and you might not have the ability to replace them. Whereas arrows, if you're hunting deer, you have the ability, if you know, get the deer, to get your arrow back and reuse it on the next deer. And you have to be able to be prepared for how do you butcher the meat? You know, how do you keep the meat fresh if, let's say, there's no electricity and no refrigeration? You have to be prepared on a level of survival skill, being able to know how to survive as if it was 1700 again or 1800 again, before electricity, before refrigeration. You know, you have to be able to know how to hunt for your own food and how to process that to be able to save. You have to know which plants are and are not safe for human consumption. Things that we don't think about anymore, things that have become a lost art. Now, those of us who would go through and be able to, you know, practice that, you know, start getting used to that ahead of time would be the ones that survive. The left, they'll, by and large, they'll die out. You know, only so many of them the government could afford to have in the military or in government offices, you know, before the government wouldn't have any ability to pay or provide for them. And since they tend to not like guns so much, they won't have much of an ability to defend themselves. And if they don't like guns, they don't like hunting for the most part. And therefore, they will pretty much starve out. So it's a matter of, if the military becomes a threat, what do we do? Well, we have to be able to, you know, be able to feed ourselves, which means we have to know how to hunt, process our meat, you know, basically take a look at all the survival stuff, emergency shelters, and so forth. You know, extreme survival skills is some of the things and lost arts that we'll need to have to practice and have the ability to do so that we can survive, as well as having the ability to fight back against the attempt to overthrow the Constitutional Republic. So that's what we talk about when preparation. It's not just guns, ammo, and body armor. It's the ability to hunt, the ability to process your food, emergency shelters. It's, you know, what plants are safe. How to, I don't know, make your own bows and arrows if yours break, you know, to be able to replace it, to be able to continue hunting. Now, how would you do all of that? And then how would you store the food long term without, say, electricity? Now, I know some of you may say, oh, we'll just get emergency food from Patriot Supply. But eventually, you know, that would run out if it happened for extended periods of time. So even that has limitations to it. So you have to be prepared for the most extreme situation that the Democrats are likely to enact should they, you know, go for their final end game. Which their final end game is to use the military, much like the FBI, as a weapon against we the people. And yeah, so at this point, I'd just be repeating myself if I talk about, you know, being prepared and how to be prepared, because I think you get the point. But the question is, will you do anything if that happens? Are you just going to roll over and take it? Or is the phrase, give me liberty or give me death, still the rallying cry of freedom in America? Only time will tell. And maybe, if we're lucky, we'll never have to find out. Maybe we can reverse course and save the Republic through the democratic process, so long as the democratic process is allowed. But never, for once, stop thinking about the possibilities. The goal here in this episode is not to say you must rise up right now and take immediate action. It's to get you thinking about where the left is going and what we would do when they go there, you know, to start thinking of worst case scenarios and how we would be able to handle and survive those worst case scenarios. All right. So that's it for this week's episode. And as far as it goes, I'm not sure if I'm ever going to be able to stay consistent at being weekly. I know I can't do daily. So I'm not going to be able to say I will be back again next week, but I will say that I will be back again. This won't be the last episode. So just take this information and start thinking about worst case scenarios and how we would handle it, how we would be able to survive it, both short term and long term. And in that, think about the difference between what you would need if everything collapsed in the middle of winter versus the middle of summer. Because, yeah, how you would handle it would be differently. Think about the seasons. I'd say think about preparation for if it happened towards the beginning of winter, when hunting and everything would be more scarce, and the ability to stay warm and so forth. So just kind of keep all of that in mind. Thank you so much for listening, and I will be back again soon.